Ingi will inform me when is the when can we start?
Yes, Chair, I'll inform you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Competition Commissioner is in as Zoom user. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Andile. I've noted that. Chairperson?
Yes, Bracken.
I think we can start.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning, honorable members.
Recording in progress.
Good morning, our officials. Morning to our guest from the Competition Commissioner, who's being led by Thembi Nkosi Bonakele. Today's meeting is just to get a briefing by the Competition on what they have, is to get a briefing from the Competition Commission on their pieces of work in relation with our small businesses, because we know all of us that we are struggling, our small businesses are struggling, they can't compete with big retails, etc., etc. So today we're having an opportunity to can listen to them and we can question, seek clarity, and also check on their recommendation moving forward, because that's what we want. The competitive aspect is one of the problematic issues in this sector. So I'm happy today we have arrived to this point. So I'm inviting your concrete ideas, honorable members. Let's listen to them so that we can be able to assist our small business. The meeting is officially opened. I will now move to item 2, which is roll call and apologies. Can we be briefed who's in and who has apologized, King?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, Minister. And good morning, Commissioner and colleagues. Chairperson, what I've realized or I've admitted in the platform, firstly to yourself, it's yourself, and then we are having Honorable Jacobs, Honorable April, Honorable Tromelang, Honorable Lubengo, Honorable Hendricks, Honorable Kruger, Honorable Mtenjane, Honorable Nkosi Oluthuli. So those are the members that I've seen. If I miss anyone, I will request the member to indicate. On the question of the apologies, I've received an apology of Honorable Mieni, and then I've also received the apology of the Deputy Minister, Mr. Stumo Dlamini. I've also received an apology of the minister is in the platform, but requested that she be excused at 10 to attend the cabinet meeting. So, and then on the side of the invitees, I've seen the Mr. Andile Kwabeni, Mr. Temikosi Bonagele, the commissioner, Ms. Tanya Van Mielens, DDG of the competition policy from the DTIC. So those are that's the delegation that is in. Back to you, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's note the apologies and appreciate that the minister is here today. And she's also requesting to join cabinet, which according to me will have to grant her that permission, because that is a responsibility in this department. I think what a full compliment as a portfolio committee members. I appreciate that. Then the next item is adoption of the agenda. I will request one of us to move for the adoption of the agenda so that we get into our business, which is the next item.
Chairperson, if I can be noted, it's Honorable April. I move for the adoption of the agenda.
Thank you, Honorable April. Any seconder?
Chairperson.
Seconded. Thank you. I will now invite the leader of our delegation, our commissioner of Competition Commission, Ubabang Tembing Kosi Bonagele, to lead us in this regard. The stage is yours, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Minister, and members of the committee. If I may just request the host to enable me to share my screen, I would appreciate that.
Braking, can you assist him in those regards? because you will have to flag the documents for us.
Yes, I've done it.
You can share your document with us on the screen.
You should be having it now, Chair.
Yes, it's flagging. Scrolling.
Thank you. Yes, it's in the end. Thanks very much for this opportunity. We have developed a set of slides. I will not go through all of them, as I understand you want to get a sense from us on what are the areas that we could have action by your committee, by your department, emanating from the work that the commission does. And my colleagues have been introduced, so I won't introduce them again. The Competition Act was established and opened its doors in 1999, and it's got three main functions: to investigate anti-competitive conduct, to regulate measures, and to conduct market inquiries, research, and advocacy. I think that most members are familiar with that mandate. It is administered by three institutions, my institution, which is the Competition Commission. We are an investigative body and a prosecutorial body, so we investigate and prosecute. In the case of measures, we refer measures to the Competition Tribunal for final approval. We have a specialist court called the Competition Tribunal, which adjudicates on our matters, and they can be appealed at the Competition Appeal Court and also at the Constitutional Court if necessary. To kick off by way of a background, it's important to remind ourselves, because I think sometimes we hit ourselves too hard, that at the dawn of democracy, the South African economy was highly concentrated. At that time, the largest five conglomerates controlled entities accounting for 84% of the capitalization of the JSE. And Anglo-American alone accounted for 43%. So one of the reasons why the Act was enacted was to dissolve this concentration in favor of inclusivity, democracy, and leveling the playing field. Fast forward in 2018, we did a study, really a basic study, which was using our own merger filings. And we found that although the picture had shifted somewhat, the top 20 shares on the JSE still made up, were still made up of 67% of the overall market cap. So about 20 firms controlled just about two-thirds of the JSE. So we then decided to do a more comprehensive study, and at the end of 2021, we did a concentration study using industry-level data from various sources, including SARS. This has really never been done before, so we combined information data from SARS, from the Competition Commission itself, from business associations, as well as some of the publicly available company reports, including their annual reports. And it covered quite a whole range of sectors, almost all sectors of the economy over the past 5 to 8 years. And that study revealed that 40% of the sectors were dominated by one firm. So if you look at that pie chart I have provided in this slide, that will be the blue portion. So the blue portion represents the number of sectors in South Africa that are dominated by by one player. There could be a few other players, but there's really one market leader. Those would be farming inputs, so things like seeds, seed treatments, as well as fertilizers, agro-processing, grain processing for human consumption, especially some of the so-called sin industries, alcohol, gambling, cigarettes, healthcare, especially medical schemes, administration, and pathology. Communications is another one, as well as the upstream mining value chain for iron ore, ferrochrome, and so on. Then the second category is that what is this color? It's that a sort of reddish color. That color represents those firms, sectors that are highly concentrated, but you do have a number of a few, so two or three firms dominate the market. This is what we sometimes call oligopolies. So here you also find a lot of farming inputs, grain storage, and some of the animal feed, agro-processing, healthcare. So healthcare here refers to hospitals. I mean, we know hospitals are dominated by, it's really no secret, Netcare, Mediclinic, and Life. So there's three of them, but they still collectively control a huge part of the market. It's a similar thing with transport, airlines, and commercial vehicles, financial services. I think financial services is a good example. So if you look at banks also, you do have more than one, but you will have like the top four really dominating the market, or top five now if you count Capitec. But you still have those kind of dominating at the sector. So if you add that 40% on the blue column and the 30%, 29.2 on the red column, you'll see that then we have 70% of the sectors in market in South Africa being concentrated. This has implications, of course, because the low levels, there are low levels of participation more generally, but this is especially the case in concentrated sectors. So in other words, where you have more concentration, you have less participation. You could have fringe firms where you have participation, but really the bulk of the value of the market is captured by the incumbents. In our economy, we found that SMMEs represent 95% of firms, which may look good, and they employ 38% of people, but actually they only capture 24% of value by tax-paying firms. So if we use the SARS data of tax-paying firms, we find that the share of revenue to SMMEs is a paltry 24%. This is particularly concerning if you compare it with the OECD average of 50 to 60% of value held by SMMEs. And I've given you a table there that also shows participation, and you will clearly see in that table that the more concentrated the sector, the less participation you find. We've also, I think, the study has observed that during challenging times, the exit rates for SMMEs have climbed and even overtook entry rates, which is concerning because you have more people exiting than those entering industry. We also, with challenging times, see more industries with declining participation than increasing. So in other words, you having HDIs, women, but more broadly, broader participation declining over time rather than increasing. And I've given you the entry and exit rates on that table. I won't go through them. I've also given you the change in participation which I will also not go through. I think what is also interesting is the information in this slide. I've given you the table of the turnover of the share of the top 10 firms in the economy and the bottom top 50. And you will see that the top 10 firms have 86% of the total compared to 1.6 for the bottom 50%. So our top 10 firms control over 86% of the share of revenue, whilst the bottom 50%, which is your SMEs, the bulk of only gets 1.6. So you may see that people are engaged in activity, but actually when you see the share of value for that sector, for these sectors, is quite low. The other interesting thing that our economists have compared is the Gini coefficient. This is the rate of inequality. So it's usually zero from zero, measured from zero to one. And the higher the number, the more perfect the inequality. In other words, the more unequal the society is. So if you look at the Gini coefficient of households in South Africa, it's 0.63%, which is the highest in the world. But if you look at the Gini coefficient for firms, it's at 0.84%, even higher than what you find. I'm just going to show you one table on that one column of that table that I've provided on the turnover of the top 10 percent share of firms and top bottom 50%. And it's quite a glaring one. It's number one there under industry classification is agriculture. You will see that agriculture, the top 10 firms shared 78.7. By 2016, that number had increased. In other words, they had further consolidated their control of revenue to 8.7%. If on the other hand, you look at the bottom 50%, by 2011, there were a paltry 1.9, let's say 2%. But look at the trend. The trend is actually a declining one because by 2016, that number had dropped to 1.3%. So in agriculture, what you see is the share of wealth, the share of revenue is again on the top firms, the top farmers, and that position is worsening and not improving if you consider concentration to be a problem. I won't go through the rest, you can read for yourself. Now, that study contains some recommendation on what needs to be done, and I'm very glad that I'm on this slide whilst the minister is still here as well, because this is where we really place a lot of emphasis around policy makers. So on the side of the Competition Act, the DTIC has amended the Act, which now addresses some of the issues around concentration and participation. For an example, now we can, after a market inquiry, if there is absolutely no other solution, we can deal with the structure. In other words, we can order a structural separation of the firm in order to enhance competition. There is also quite a number of provisions. Some of them I'm going to talk about later if I have time. And the Act also deals with participation. So in mergers, that's been tightened up. We now must look at BEE. We must look at worker participation and things like that. That's all in the package of the amendments to the Act that were done in 2019. But even with that, we say that competition law alone cannot achieve the transformation of the economic structure. Government levers impact on economic structure and can be focused to address this entrenched concentration through legislation and regulation. There's a lot that can be achieved through regulation And in fact, we are finding that concentration is rising more and more in areas that are regulated, where you have licensing. I'll give you examples so that I don't just talk high level. So if you look at that concentration study I referred to, there are higher levels of concentration for the fishing industry. Now, fishing quotas and fishing rights are regulated by the state. But actually, we're seeing not only is it concentrating, but it is worsening. So the concentration is getting worse. And as you sit here, I'm sure you recognize that sectors, and the minister will be familiar with this, so sectors such as telecommunications, all of those sectors are regulated. So, I mean, it is the state through regulators that licenses broadcasting. But pay TV, highly concentrated. Some of the mobile sector also quite concentrated. So a lot, even if you look at gambling, for example, gambling, casinos, all of those sectors, you come to healthcare, licensing for hospitals. We have three large hospitals, and in when it comes to retail, you really have two market leaders in the retail for pharmaceutical products, Clicks and Dis-Chem. All of those are licensed sectors. But so in other words, where government is licensing people, is giving people rights to operate, we're seeing that there is more concentration. What should be concerning is that even in the space, emerging space, such as renewables or solar, as well as wind energy generation, more than 50% of those licenses are now held by one group. So that's also, it's emerging, it's new, but with government licensing, it's also consolidating. So what I'm saying here is that it seems that where government is regulating sectors, we have a problem. And I think we should be frank about this. So there is a lot that can be done when it comes to that. That also includes the area of procurement. We're talking to Treasury all the time about the role of procurement and competition and the impact that procurement has on SMMEs. Policies such as investment incentives, support services, and technology development policies, all we think can play a role beyond just competition policy. Again, an area the minister may be familiar with in the telecoms, we consume a lot of cell phones, smartphones, we consume a lot of tablets. But when you look at our performance, I mean, we've just had one of the firms producing, the only firm producing tablets closing down in East London. So it seems to us that we need a very clear technology policy that's directed at entry of South African firms, and largely those will tend to be SMMEs. So we recommend a government-wide competition policy that will enable coordination and a systematic approach across all government, and to ensure that government action don't favor incumbent firms and work against inclusion. So we hope that the study will help with prioritization initiatives, and also will foster some benchmarking and target setting. As I have indicated, the agricultural value chain warrants immediate focus to support the broader land reform initiative. We think that land reform actually is going to be meaningless if it will not fail, if the smaller firms and smaller farmers are not sustainable in the sector. And in this regard, we think that it's not just, yes, extension services, which provincial governments in the main are doing. Those need to be strengthened. But also it's about fixing institutions such as land bank and other lenders, because lending is a key aspect of the land reform program and agriculture. So greater coordination is required. Or the one thing I could say also about agriculture is that we believe that there needs to be aggregation for the agricultural sector. So farmers, co-ops, and emerging farmers cannot face the kind of market that I've described in the concentration study. So they don't need to worry about the market. Somebody needs to be able to do that. I think we need to go back to those structures we used to have, that such as the Agricultural Marketing Board, that could be able to give offtake to farmers, or at least market farmers' products in the same way that established farmers are doing with co-ops. So a lot of large farmers, actually, if you look at citrus, the big growth in citrus has been due in part to their ability to coordinate their exports. And you can see the same when it comes to some of the fish species, so abalone and squid. There is a lot of cooperation, so people who are primary producers don't need to worry about the market. There are aggregators in the market. One of the aggregators, actually, and I can talk about it later, are the fresh produce markets that are owned by the municipality. The Joburg market is the largest of such markets in the whole of the Southern Hemisphere. It's a potentially a huge aggregator, but it's actually captured by large farmers and agents that are also working with the large farmers, something which we are currently investigating. So we think that greater coordination is required between regulators and public entities responsible for issuing of licenses and concessions. We think that also this might require that there be concurrency between the commission and the sector regulator, sometimes which is the government department. So for an example, if you look at these hospital licenses, we really have been complaining about the change of ownership in hospital licensing. So you find a lot of black people, they get licensed to build a hospital. Immediately they obtain that license, they give it either to Mediclinic or Netcare or even Life, and they will just be a small minority if they don't sell it 100%. So that is an issue that we think requires closer scrutiny, because clearly the government departments at a provincial level are not paying attention to it. We think that at least the commission must have the opportunity to also look at those, because they are not really measured in the classic sense of the word, but they are transfers of license.
I don't know to differentiate.
The last thing is that we also think that there needs to be a more systematic funding support for SMME. So when you look at HDIs, we think that, honorable members, a lot needs to be done to prescribe policy, but also for commercial banks and other financial institutions. We think that there needs to be a conversation about lending patterns and funding patterns in South Africa. Why, for example, is it easy to buy and finance a luxury car than it is to, say, buy a tractor? So things like that, we think, need firm policy and sometimes even regulations. There's a whole range of legislation that promotes competition and are focused here in the opportunities in the Competition Act, and I'm going to highlight a few that you may also want to pay attention to. So the one is on that third bullet, we have a possibility that small and medium enterprises could apply for exemption from the Competition Act. So in other words, where they need to coordinate buyer groups. For an example, we can give exemption to spaza shops that want to buy together. We can give exemptions to co-ops and smallholder farmers, just about any small business that requires to coordinate. They can approach us and we can provide this exemption under Section 10 of the Act. We're finding that only established sectors are taking advantage of this. Citrus is a very good example. Citrus grew tenfold over the period that they had an exemption for their exports to the US. Tenfold both in terms of tonnage and revenue. But unfortunately with citrus, we got stuck because it's really, there is no, it's almost like an old white boys class. So we grant an exemption, but there is literally just these white males who are taking advantage of this. And so we've had to review that exemption, and we're talking to them about transformation now. It's the same thing I've mentioned, fish, things like squid and abalone. That is a very lucrative export market. If you look at provinces with a huge coastal area, the big opportunity for the Eastern Cape, for example, on abalone, you have some capacity in the Western Cape already, very little limited capacity in the Eastern Cape. But you need an exemption to do that so that people can share knowledge, people can also jointly market the product, because your market is in China, so you need to be able to reach it. And so there is that possibility of an exemption. I just thought I would mention. Also, in these amendments that have just been done, there are buyer power provisions. So these are quite helpful provisions for small and medium enterprises. And they are effective. And in terms of this, it is prohibited for a dominant firm as a buyer to require from or impose unfair pricing or trading conditions to SMMEs. And these apply to designated sectors. So the minister has to designate a sector where these apply. And so far, the minister has designated agro-processing, grocery, wholesale and retail, e-commerce and online services. So in other words, in these sectors that I have mentioned, as we speak, it is prohibited for these firms to have unfair trading conditions against SMMEs. This also is a provision that require to be popularized and taken advantage of. Because this actually allows people to sell to retailers, especially so grocery retail, wholesale and retail. This is where a lot of SMMEs that produce products can actually insist on selling these products via the supermarket chains and other retailers. So obviously the objective of that is to enhance the participation of SMMEs and historically disadvantaged persons in the economy by protecting these from firms that can fairly exploit them. There is also accompanying this an anti-avoidance provision, which makes it a contravention to avoid buying from designated suppliers in order to avoid the application of this provision. So in other words, they can, an incumbent, a dominant firm that as a buyer of goods, cannot refuse to buy from SMMEs in order to avoid these provisions. There are also other provisions dealing with price discrimination. You cannot price discriminate as a dominant firm against these small players and the HDP firms. And just now on a few other initiatives we've taken from an enforcement point of view, just to give you a sense of what is happening and where we are. We have guidelines that we have promulgated last year for the promotion of competition in the automotive aftermarket. These guidelines are intended to promote market access by SMMEs and HDPs in the so-called aftermarket for the auto sector. So this does away, for an example, with the requirement that your warranty will be dishonored if you use an independent workshop to repair your car. We've also asked the companies, the auto OEMs, to separate the service plan or the so-called motor plan from the price of the car, so that the consumer has an opportunity to decide whether they want to buy the motor plan. It's quite a comprehensive a set of guidelines. I will not also go through all of them for the sake of time, but I'm more than happy to talk to anyone of you who may be interested in detail. It's also available in our website at this. So we encourage, we have been talking to the Right to Repair, for an example, which is an organization of workshop owners from all our communities, blacks, whites, Indians, everybody there, colored, you name them. They are all running workshops and they have all been excluded from access to this market. So we've been working with them and they are quite excited. They are rolling out their plans. And some of the OEMs are working with them. They are cooperating. There are a few that are resisting, but we'll be talking to them. And if need be, we will be prosecuting. We've also given input on the amendments to the Construction Industry Development Board. Here, just so you know, the construction industry, there's a lot of things that prevent access and growth of SMMEs. Just the classification of professionals and registration of professionals, very discriminatory and sometimes arbitrary. You have people, for example, who study through universities of technologies, which is we used to call technicons. If you have an engineer who studies and then you have another one who studies at university, those two streams never meet. So in other words, no matter how much experience you may have, if you qualified through a university of technology, you got a diploma, you even got a BTEC, which is equivalent to a bachelor's, the two will never meet. So you'll never be registered as an engineer. So we've been talking to the department here, responsible for this, Minister Patricia Delisle, which is aware and is working on this, but also this issue of grading. The grading also prevents people from growing in the market and accessing a certain size of businesses. And we think that there's a need for reforms. In fact, there are ongoing reforms in that area. So we're not saying don't regulate, but your regulation should allow for growth, should allow for people to keep growing. We also are working, we're part of the FinTech Working Group, which is really aimed at allowing people who are innovating around financial services. There are regulations, of course, there are banking licenses and all sorts of licenses in the financial sector. But we think that there needs to be reforms there as well to allow some of these players to be able to deploy their products into the market. We're working very well here with the Reserve Bank and other financial sector regulators in reviewing this situation. We did an LPG market inquiry a few years ago, and we're still monitoring the implementation of its recommendations. One of it of the recommendations was the abolition of the evergreen contract. So the refineries in South Africa had long-term contracts for the offtake of LPG with companies such as EasyGas, Afrox. Those were the kind of monopolies or oligopolies that were promoted by these evergreen contracts. So we're saying that open up that market, sell LPG to other players, and we've also recommended a set aside for historically disadvantaged persons, because we found, I think it was quite a startling finding, that actually historically disadvantaged firms were getting lower than 3% of supply of LPG from refineries. And that obviously was quite a shocking finding. And so we've recommended set aside. So we are happy that the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy is taking this matter up. They have now released a policy document on LPG that takes many of our recommendations forward. On the supermarket side, let me call it retail side. Again, we've done comprehensive work here, and you'll bear with me, Chair. I won't get into everything, but let me just highlight for you two or three things that are quite important. So we found that there were these long-term exclusive lease agreements that large supermarket groups such as ShopRite and Pick n Pay had. So if they get into a shopping mall as an anchor tenant, they don't allow another supermarket to get in. But more than that, they don't even allow some of the specialty stores. So fresh produce, people selling fruit and veg are not allowed. People even selling biltong or running a butchery were not allowed. So we've done away with those, and I'm very happy that both Pick n Pay and Sopra Checkers have agreed to eliminate these. They have agreed to eliminate them immediately for SMMEs as well as firms owned by HDIs, and we have a phase out period for the rest. So you can imagine they want us to phase out gradually the issue of them competing against one another. But that's quite remarkable progress as well, that does need to be taken advantage of. The second thing that came out of this inquiry, which I have not included in this slide, but it's quite important, is that in relation to spaza shops, in the townships, we did a survey checking what exactly is causing people in the township to have this decline in participation in retail. Now, in townships and villages, you had locals running these retail shops for the longest time. The general dealers in villages, as well as some of the supermarkets and spaza shops in townships, were run by locals. But we're seeing that a lot of these are being taken over by foreign nationals in the main. And to some extent, there is also encroachment by the supermarket groups into townships. Our survey showed us that there are three factors, and I'll start. The other two is obviously competition from foreign nationals, competition from the established supermarket groups. But actually, that was not the number one reason. The number one reason was crime, because a lot of people in the townships and villages will use cash to purchase, to make their purchases. And that cash, you can't bank it. You have to have it overnight. often at home, and the criminals would know that you have this cash. And so the reason why people are no longer interested in running these businesses is that the high levels of crime, this is what people tell us, make it impossible for them to do this. So unfortunately, I mean, if you are interested in small business, if you are interested in small business, you can't avoid to deal and tackle the issue of crime, because it's one of the biggest deterrents that we have. The other area that is growing is that of online marketing. So you would know that we use now online platforms to order food from restaurants, for food deliveries, even for booking airlines, for booking accommodation. There are these intermediaries, online intermediation platforms that we use. We found that these are actually most often working against small businesses. So we established a market inquiry to look at whether platform conduct, contracts, prices, and terms of use are discriminatory against SMMEs. And in fact, we are already finding very interesting things there. It's very clear to us that the small restaurants are discriminated, in fact, might be subsidizing some of the larger, more established restaurant chains in terms of these contracts. But I won't say much more here because this is ongoing work that we are doing. We've just referred a case for those who are interested on the technology side. We've just referred a case against Facebook on exclusionary conduct. Again, Facebook here is accused of excluding a new entrant, an SMME that has gotten in a GovChat and innovated around government information, and Facebook has threatened to remove them from their platform. And we've run an exclusionary case. We've just referred this case to the tribunal 2 days ago. We've had a case before Uniplay. We're doing Uniplay 2 now. This is where the guys who own, so there's a big business for manufacturing of number plates. But you can't enter that business because the dominant firm, Uniplay, has in the past insisted that you must buy blanks from them, because you need those blanks in order where you're going to write number plate. You must buy those blanks from them, often at exorbitant prices. You must also buy the machines to do the actual writing. You must buy that from them as well. And it's been extraordinary how they have been able also to lobby government to get their prescribed technology to be the one that's in use for making number plates. Some of you will remember that in Gauteng, for an example, there used to be metal number plates that were allowed, as well as the plastic ones. But now the metal ones are not allowed, only the plastic ones are allowed. And interestingly, it was Uniplay lobbying in part that caused this change. So that's an entrenched dominance. We've already won the first case against them. We're running a second one. We are breaking that monopoly. Public transport, we're doing a case against PRASA here. PRASA owns the bus station in Johannesburg. The bus terminal there is essential for all the other users. And it's been very unfortunate that this SOE has been excluding and discriminating the other bus operators. And you have seen some of them have even exited the market now. That might not be the sole reason, but it's certainly a very big contributor, the fees that they have to pay to PRASA. PRASA, we have also found that favors its own downstream. PRASA operates, as you know, the bus companies of the state, such as Translux, and these have been favored unfairly against the private operators, some of which have had to exit the market. We're dealing with this as a case, but we're also engaging with PRASA and the Department of Transport. There's been also the issue of bus subsidies. This is another big one. Bus subsidies at a provincial level, we've not been seeing licensing being issued. That means that the incumbent operators that receive these subsidies have in fact been entrenched in the market. There have been no tenders issued for new companies to express interest to receive subsidies. That is obviously quite a concern for us, because it would mean that there would never be new entrants. E-hailing, I just want to mention this because it's also quite important. It was part of our public transport market inquiry. We think that especially a Department of Transport and small business needs to pay attention to the impact of e-hailing on the taxi industry, particularly the small operators that were operating out of the taxi rank. And this means that we need to relook at the regulation and ensure that these are competitive. Let me make an example. If you take a taxi, a meter taxi from Johannesburg to OR Tambo, they are not allowed to pick up a passenger from OR Tambo back to Johannesburg, because they can only pick up a passenger from the taxi rank. And if their taxi rank is in Johannesburg, then they cannot pick up a passenger anywhere. That makes it impossible for them to be able to compete with e-hailing providers who pick up passengers everywhere. That's just one example. Data pricing, I won't spend too much time on this as well. Data pricing affects SMMEs. A lot of businesses now are facilitated online. Even ordering vegetables now for a vegetable stall is going to require that you have data in order to connect with the market. And we think that you should look at the issue of data if you want to promote small businesses. Of course, we've done some work here, and I don't have time now to be taking you through that, because I'd really like to stop at 5:30. I've spoken about fishing rights. I'm now just going to talk. This is the last section before I stop talking. I'm going to talk now a little bit about the work that we are doing in mergers. So in mergers, we have the possibility of advancing public interest issues. And public interest issues include employment, SMMEs, promoting HDI interests, and so on. Protecting industrial sectors or regions where it's necessary. So I think there was a famous merger of Walmart Massmart in 2011. This is probably one of the flagship cases we had, where there was an intervention, and this case went all the way to the Competition Appeal Court to test the provisions. And here the concern was that the entry of Walmart would displace local suppliers that were providing goods to Massmart. The court agreed to order the parties to set up a fund of 200 million that was meant to build capacity of small scale farmers and some of the manufacturers in the value chain, so that they can be able to be sustainable and would meet the standards of supplying to Walmart. And since then, we've done a number of measures where we've had similar conditions. The latest one, which we have done a few days ago, is the MTN sale of towers to IHS. IHS is a Nigerian company that listed on the New York Stock Exchange. We approved the merger subject to comprehensive supply conditions targeted at SMMEs and HTPs in the telecommunications sector. The numbers are quite high there that are set aside for these. Of course, they are held confidential, but they will endure for a period of 10 years, which is quite impressive. We've also got a provision now on those conditions dealing with payment terms and working capital for those contracted to do work for MTN and IHS. And MTN will spend $60 million a year on the supplier development fund for 10 years, and this will be CPI adjusted. And just as a reminder, we've had Coca-Cola supplier development fund, which was also a condition to this. It's a fund of $800 million over 5 years that is meant to support entry and sustain it over the value chain of Coca-Cola. And part of this, by the way, was also a divestiture of the Appetizer brand to an SMME and an HDI majority shareholding, but it will continue to be distributed by Coca-Cola. And lastly, the SAP Mila AB InBev transaction. This is also where InBev was buying SAB Mila, our flagship beer company. And we imposed quite a comprehensive condition there, which included a $1 billion supplier development fund, local procurement directed at HDIs and SMMEs, setting aside 10% fridge space in the taverns and other places for SMMEs. So quite a comprehensive set of remedies from measures. Chair, thanks very much. I thought I should try and limit myself to an hour. I know it is a lot of information, but that's because we're doing a lot, so I didn't want to not to give you just a flavor of what we do. A lot of these have their details in our website. They are available, the reports and some of the work that we do. You can get them there. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thanks for the comprehensive presentation. I believe members have enjoyed it. I have enjoyed it. I didn't know that you investigate and prosecute. That was the most interesting one to me, that you are not just a commissioner, but you are doing your work. We really appreciate. At this stage, I will invite members to ask, appreciate, seek clarity questions. Indeed, the information is huge, but if you say the detailed one, we can access it in your website. That's what we are going to do, because as the portfolio committee, it's our responsibility to do oversight. We appreciate your work. At the same time, we are eager to can have solution on how best can we assist our small businesses. Thank you so much. I will now invite honorable members to ask question, appreciate, etc., etc. King, you will inform me about those who are raising their hands.
Yes.
I know it was a long presentation, but I believe on the interest of members from their side, I believe they've got something to say or to ask. Thank you.
Chairperson, so far there's a first person
It was Honorable Hendricks, and then Honorable De Villiers, and then Honorable Mathulelwa. Those are the hands so far, Chair.
Thank you. In that order, Honorable Hendricks.
And Honorable Jacobs. And Honorable Nkosi Luthuli.
Okay, Honorable Hendricks, the stage is yours.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, like yourself, we appreciate what the presenter calls a flavor of what they do. We also note with concern that small business only constitute about under 2% of the value of the market. So after 20 years, I don't know how many years this unit has been in operation, they've only achieved 1.6% in spite of having what interested you a lot, that they can prosecute. But what you didn't mention, Honorable Chair, is that they also have their own court. So they've got everything, and there's no reason why after being in existence for so many years that they can tip the scales, that those who controlled everything during apartheid don't control as much as they do, but by now at least half, 50% should have been in the hands of the previously disadvantaged, which is largely small business. We also know that they can fine, because they've got their own court, they can even fine you 10 million. They can fine you 10% of your turnover, which can run into R1 billion. So they got a nice kitty, and I want to know if those fines, which they collect and fund and promote less competitiveness challenges which the small business have and which our committee has oversight of, can some of that money be used in one way or another for them to do better than 1.6%? I mean, 1.6% is an insult after 28 years of our democracy. So we would like to know, maybe it's not their fault. Maybe there needs to be new legislation. And if the presenter has thought about it, what extra legislation will give them more power? They already have, they already can prosecute. They have their own court. What more do they want? We also want to find out if they can't twist the arm of the SBBD. Now, the SBDD is an outfit that governs government advertising. And as you know, Honorable Chair, government has got a lot of advertising to do. So is there any way that SBBD can assist small businesses to advertise their offerings, whether it's on TV, on radio, on social media? That is possibly one way that we can do better than 1.6%. I mean, we are proud of 1.6%. No one can be proud. Then I think I learned a lot from the presenter when he mentioned that banks are quite willing, Honorable Chair, to give you a Mercedes of nearly R1 billion and you can pay it off. But if you ask for a tractor for your farm, then there's so many problems to get a tractor. So it seems that, they're making it difficult for small businesses to acquire farming equipment so that they can retain the benefits they had during apartheid. So we want to know, seeing that this is one of the entities that can make a lot of money, they can print money, Honorable Chair. Can't they provide an interest-free facility to lend money to emerging farmers to buy the tractor no interest, so they only pay off the amount of the capital and possibly the admin charges to service the loan? Because we're not making much progress, Honorable Chair. 1%, 1.6% for the small business to have is nothing to be proud of. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Hendricks. The next speaker is Honorable de Villiers. Over to you, Honorable.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, colleagues. I would have liked to say good morning to the Minister, but I see she's done a quick cameo appearance and has already left us again. I would also say thank you for the, I think, brilliant presentation. It's quite clear to me that it was a well-prepared presentation. I'm impressed by the level of research and detail that the Competition Commission goes into. And I think that they do important work. And, you know, some of us might agree with some of the findings they do and actions they take, and some of us might with not. But at the end of the day, I think they serve a very important purpose in terms of making sure that there is competition in the market. And as we all know, competition is good. When we have competition in the market, then people start to produce better products and better services because they don't have monopolies. Two questions or maybe comments that I would like to give is, firstly, something which I did not hear the Competition Commission presenter talk about, which is something I think is worth looking at, is just the very basic regulations that is easy for big business to comply with, but really hard for small business to comply with, basically, which makes it very much more difficult for business to compete. And I will make two very practical examples. The one is the VAT threshold. So any business who currently does over R1 million in turnover is forced to register as a VAT vendor and then forced to start doing VAT claims and also paying over VAT to the government. Now, that sounds not so bad. I can promise you it is a lot of extra time, a lot of extra money, and a lot of extra energy to be VAT compliant. Because firstly, your accounting costs, expenses, double to triple overnight, because now suddenly you need someone or a consultant to help you with your VAT every single month. And if you're only doing R1 million turnover, that means that a big portion a year now, that means that a big portion of the money which you would actually like to reinvest in your business, or you'd like to employ people to grow your business, is now just going into the red tape and the bureaucracy of doing these VAT claims. So something like that, or other related tax laws, is something I think the Competition Commission must look at. You know, is it fair to have these highly regulated tax obligations like that on small businesses, and to what effect does that start to make them uncompetitive? It's not a problem for a big business. A big business just throws money at the problem. They employ better accountants and they get better specialists in, and then they are VAT compliant. The second thing is of course just also labor legislation. I mean, it is really, really tough for a small business who's trying to grow to be subject to the same strict labor legislation practices that a big business needs to comply with. And I really think that if you look at the incredibly tight and restrictive labor laws that we have, it's one thing for a big business who's got a big HR department and has all these specialists who, you know, can go to the CCMA and can write, you know, tick all the right boxes. But for a small business that's just trying to grow, it's got 5 to 10 employees, I think there's an argument that enforcing these really, really strict labor laws on the small business stops them from employing people, because they need to invest so much more money and time in sticking to these very restrictive and very tough labor laws. So those are two examples. There's probably way more. But I would like to ask the Competition Commission that they look at all of these different, call them red tape, you can call them laws, you can call them regulations, but all of these regulatory practices which make it really tough for a small business to exist and to comply, to just have the opportunity to grow. And then lastly, and I would almost say most importantly, the one thing which I did not hear this hear in this presentation, and we heard a lot of good things in the presentation, is the biggest monopoly elephant in the room, and that's Eskom. I mean, there's no small, medium, or large business in this country whose number one problem at the moment is not just the security or the having the reliance of a reliable power supply. So what I'm trying to say is that no business can function without power, small, big, large. And at the moment, we have the biggest monopoly in the country in the form of Eskom, who makes it absolutely a power provider to compete with them. And although government is making promises to the market and doing this to the network and that, the reality is that today still, Eskom has a massive monopoly on the power supply to the country. And that is not good for anyone. And so I would like to ask the Competition Commission, what are they doing and what are they saying to government about this massive, massive monopoly that is probably the one thing that is destroying the most small businesses in this country, is the absolute escalating costs of power combined with the unreliable network that we have. That you know, when people are trying to produce products or trying to produce services, they are just getting tackled by load shedding after load shedding, 15 years of load shedding. I mean, it really is a sorry state of affairs. And it was all because that market is dominated by one monopoly, the biggest monopoly in this country. So I would like to really employ the Competition Commission to look at that. Thank you, Chairperson. Those are my remarks and comments.
Thank you, Honourable De Villiers. Honourable Matulelwa.
Thank you, Chair. Am I audible?
Yes, you are audible.
All right. Thank you very much to the Commission of Competition and with the presentation as well. Greetings to honorable members and staff. I'm very much concerned, although I'm covered in many things by Honorable De Villiers. So my concern is when we were speaking about the farms, and I think I've written several times the question even to the minister, to the former minister as well, but there's nothing that happened. In Ugu District, Renkonyeni Municipality, Ward 32 in KwaZulu-Natal, there is a cooperative that produces ET3, peanuts, mango, banana, and many other things. But they produce these things in their own garden. These people, they should have some space, but they do it in their garden. But to my surprise, it was this cooperative is also supplying overseas as we speak about their production. These people are victims of land expropriation during apartheid era. They were taken from Ngwai, Emachisini, where they had their farms, whom they were not, they are not compensated until to date. These people, they need only the minimum of 50 hectares of land to be able to flow their with their production chain. But here, there's nothing we can do because of the disappointment that has been done by a ruling party who sold out Windabaye land expropriation without compensation, which is the key of the economic freedom in our lifetime. Because the presenter is talking about the taxi industry or the taxi rank and the regulations that they are going to look at, but they don't know that taxi ranks in Matatiel, Mount Fletcher, Matlea, Mtata, in Eastern Cape in particular, they are along the streets in town. They requested piece of land for 27 years now, and there's enough land in our townships, but they are not given to taxi owners. Ukuthi bakwazi ukuthi they bathi build their bakhe ama taxi ranks wabo. But yeah, we can hear the presentation as well. We need to be realistic about the land question, colleagues. There will be no economic freedom without state being a custodian of the land. We can talk and talk and talk, but small businesses, they need land, more especially small emerging farmers, more especially the taxi ranks, they need enough land for to build their own ranks. So as we speak, Chair, I just want to ask a question to the Commission. What are they going to do to make sure that small businesses are given enough land without compensation? Because you can't give them land, they can't afford land because they are still developing their businesses. They can't afford the land at the same time. So I just want to know what is the Commission going to do on this thing of land, because there are land in all townships that I've mentioned above. As we speak now, Chair, we need to be realistic, colleagues, in this thing of small business is very much serious. But now as we speak, the state does not even own a small portion, as little as a school garden plot. Don't have land. But at least come 2024, we are going to expropriate the land without compensation under the EFF government. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Jacobs.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. And I also want to record our appreciation to Commissioner Bonakele for a very comprehensive, very insightful, very informative, educative presentation. Chair, I want to ask two questions and just some comments. So the two questions I have is, Commissioner Bonakele, you talk about market inquiry and also structural separation. So I'd like to see in what industries or what sectors you actually have done this, because that's an important tool. Because clearly we see that capital in South Africa is not patriotic. So we have to use legislation and compliance to get them to work to ensure that we have all a share in the ownership of our economy. That's the one question. Then I also want to hear from you, Commissioner, what has other countries done to break down cartels and monopolies and in other countries? I know America used to do that, and if you can just share some insights where we can learn. I know that the EU is doing great work on the digital economy and ensuring that big players like Facebook and Google also subject themselves to the will of the people. So Chair, just my initial comment is that this is very comprehensive, and I feel that we must embrace and study and second all the recommendations of the Competition Commission. There's a lot of work here for our officials. I also certainly feel that we as this portfolio must adopt all the recommendations, especially those relating to small business. I also feel that we must reach out to our other portfolio committee members or different committees in the economic transformation cluster so that we can do a joint response, because this is very comprehensive. But what it does paint, Chair, is it really paints a very painful picture of where we come of economic ownership since 1994 till now. That yes, we've attained our political freedom, but our economic freedom remains elusive. The Commissioner speaks about five firms in 1994 owning about 80-odd%, and this time around, 2018, it's about 20 firms. So it's still concentrated. Our economy is still in hands of monopolies. And if we want to characterize it, it's still largely, he calls it, the old white boys club. And it's unfortunate. And I think we want to commend the work that the Commission is doing, but clearly they're not doing enough. And the levers we need is not only just the Competition Commission, as you correctly said, it's also the political will. I know our president is appealing to the business people to come on board, to open up, to use broad-based black economic empowerment, to share the market, to create inclusive, to incentivize jobs. But I think what is very clear is that our business sector is only for themselves and profit and maximization, and not really caring for the landless, the people that really needs the jobs. And so I think for me, there's a lot of dominance in the market. I was shocked to hear. I know here in the Western Cape, the food security, the food value chain is largely in the hands of a few monopolies and predominantly white. I think the whole value chain, we've also done some work here. More than 80% from the grain, from the seed, right up to the processing and the retail, all of these industries are predominantly market and concentrated. You know, ShopRite and these big companies bully out all your small, medium people in the market. Like, I want to use one example, like the micro flowers industry. Those sellers of flowers on the shops and the corners and those industries traditionally used to be the ladies, the Malay ladies on the Cape Flats. They've been decimated by ShopRite and by the big companies. And that anti-bully tactics or bullying tactics is still taking place. So, Che, in all of these sectors, we see still a dominance. And I think what we need to do is we need to ensure that our localization, our set aside, our all of those things find expression. The minister in our state of the budget address last year said that there will be 1,000 products that will be locally produced. We need to ensure that at least more of our local markets are in. We've heard of the mergers, Commissioner, but how can we ensure that we also have supply chain development? And next time around, I think we must also invite those big retail companies to say that this is the findings. What are you going to do for small business in the sector? I mean, that stats on the inequality, Chair, it's mind-boggling. We know our Gini coefficient is high at 6.63, but the firm income inequality is almost one. It's almost absolutely unequal, which is at 0.84. I think all of us must be concerned across political parties. And what it does says to me is also that, look, the economic privilege that is there, and it happened to mainly be concentrated in race, it's defined in white, is something that we need to deal with. There's a lot of interesting nuggets that we got from the commissioner. The citrus industry is also a big industry in the Western Cape. They have been able to come together. But again, it's at exclusionary practice because it's still predominantly largely in the hands of monopoly with a few firms and largely white. Chair, even in the construction industry, we also experienced that here in the Western Cape, that discrimination on job discrimination actually has a racial connotation. So by and large, your engineer who has university education happens to be by and large traditionally still being white. And so the barriers to entry is also big. I think there's a lot coming out of this presentation. I think what we must do is to look at this, like the Pick and Pay, the spaza shops, and all of these markets, even the fascinating stuff around the LPG gas, the evergreen contracts, and the fact that only 3% of the contracts went to new entrants or black entrants is a challenge. The data pricing is also something that is a big problem for us in our communities. So in short, Chair, I want to commend the Competition Commission. I want to salute the work that they're doing. They are the true fighters for economic liberation and emancipation. And I think what we need to do is to beef up and support them and ensure that we put more legislation in place. But I think we must also learn from the regulation, because sometimes I think the one point that does make is that when we give license, departments like the health give license, then there's almost a buy over of white, black businesses that gets license, and then they are forced into selling that at, and that's the same that's happening in the fishing industry. So, Chair, in short, I want to thank you, and we didn't do a mistake by inviting the Commission, and we want to appreciate the work of the Commission, and I think there's lots of work to be done, but this also gives us as legislator legislative body an important tool that we must fix our economy, and we must make this economy work for all of our people, not for a few. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Jacobs. Honorable Nkosi Lithuli.
Thank you, Chair, to give me this opportunity. In fact, I heard from the presentation that there are some assistance from the SAP, but first of all, I must appreciate and thank the presentation from the Commission, so that because we now understand exactly what is happening through these big companies. In SAP Commission, we are having a very, very, very big problem concerning about the distribution. It's a lot of people around in South Coast. They came by my house and then they were asking for help. We are having a problem of the distribution of SAP product. They are giving the big consumers, wholesalers. Rather than the small outlets, they are having a big problem. They are not delivering to them. Some of them, they are about to close. I don't know whether the Commissioner can help us and find out what is the story, because let's say along the coast we got a big wholesale for beers and on all those stuff from SAP, rather than delivering the stuff to the outlet. They are all the product of SAP, you will get it from the wholesale. You can't get it through. Even we are a distributor. You can't even get it. You sometimes they deliver what they want out of your bottle store, or rather what they got in stock. Now my appeal to you, commissioner, can you help those people who are a small business, because some of them, they are about to close. And out of these big shops, we are having a problem. Some of the shopping centers which are built in the rural areas we are having a problem of they are not allowed to sell the fruit and vegetables because of the big shops, because they say it's prohibited to sell fresh products on the fresh products on that shopping centers. Like we got about along the coast, we have about 3 shopping centers. The big shop, Pick and Pay, and the others, they are saying no, you are not allowed to have a space in the shopping center for selling the vegetables. So is it, I heard from you saying that it's not allowed. I don't know whether you can able to help us on that. Thirdly, there are certain motor industries or motor dealers. To the blacks, they can allow you to spend almost more than R1 million for argument's sake, to buy a small car. But if you want to buy, let's say, a truck or anything, you want to buy a truck to deliver sand to the people and sell sand sometimes or whatever it is, they don't allow that. I can tell you the story which my friend happened to, he was looking to buy for a truck. He got a car of 1.7 million. He bought it from that particular dealer. When he went to buy a truck, they say, no, you can't afford it, all those things. So I don't know whether the commissioner can help us to open those doors for the poor people, because some, they can manage to sell something. Like along the coast, normally we are having a lot of sand, river sand and plaster sand, but you can't, it's not easy to get the trucks out of those dealers. Only I can stop the chairman and appeal to the commissioner to try and help us, especially along the south coast. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Nkosi Lithole. This was the last speaker. Do we have any other hand, King?
Yes, Chairperson. It's Honorable Mthenjane.
Okay. Honorable Mthenjane.
Can I ask something? There is a hand from Clarence Johnson. I don't know him, because this is allowed for members to participate.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is there a member that has entered with the name of Clarence Johnson?
Who's that member?
Now I'm trying to find out if it's the member, or if it's not a member, and just advise Clarence Johnson that the participation in question and answers, it's only members. Thank you.
Yeah, just check that for me. Honorable Mthenjane, the stage is yours.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and greetings to colleagues. Thanks for the presentation as well. Well, it was loud and clear. But also, I want to put this very clear, Chairperson, that the Competition Commission has said, I don't think it gives us a solution per se, because they are telling us of something that we know already. We know of all these bullying tactics by the bigger companies to the small SMEs. We already know about that. I did not hear them, but I did not hear them where they are telling us that since their establishment, this is how far they've went, this is how far they've succeeded. So, or maybe to tell us, let's say maybe in the last financial year up to now, if they can tell us how many cases did they come across, how many did they succeeded in prosecuting, how many are outstanding, and how many are impossible to prosecute, so that as a committee, we can then zoom in and try to help them. Because remember, we are also here to help such competition commissions. We are not necessarily here to just sit and watch. We are here also to help, so they can tell us where they've got the problem, so that as a portfolio committee, we can then zoom in and help them. And then another thing, Chairperson, I've heard the presenter telling us that what they found out in the township business is that people from township in the spazas and everything, they no longer do business because, according to them, their findings is that there's a lot of crime. Yes, there's a lot of crime in the township. I agree with that. But that, I don't agree, that is the cause for them to not do business. It is for the very same department, our department, this department, that is not taking care of its people. Because you can't be telling us that only the foreigners, the so-called foreigners, they are the ones who are successful in the township. But the very same township where you say there is a crime. So remember, crime does not have eyes. So crime goes to anywhere where it wants to go. So do you want to tell us that those foreigners, they are not attacked by criminals? They are. So, but they are still successful. So in other words, this department, Chairperson, does not take care of its own people in the townships and also in the rural areas, as we always say these things here. Now there's a competition commission which came here to witness what we've been saying, that in the townships and the far-flung areas in the rural areas, this department does not go there and interact with those people there. That is why there's nothing going on. Only these big businesses that are getting the big chunks every day and as much as being funded and all that. We know that already. Now, that is hence we're saying they must help us to tell us how many they've succeeded in terms of prosecuting these cases, so that we could see that indeed they are here and they are working. Because if they come just here to tell us what we know already, then it doesn't mean that we have sorted the problem. We know already, we are going around here in our constituencies. We know that there is such a problem of bullying by these big companies. We know that. That will be the last one, Chairperson, because I'm covered by a lot more other questions that I had. My colleagues has already clarified or asked the questions for all of us. Now, one last question, one last thing, Chairperson. It's not a question, it's a comment about our own minister and the deputy. We keep on repeating, same thing is keep on repeating itself here. Chairperson, I'm just pleading with this committee that indeed, can we get the chance that they can come and account to us and tell us indeed that if we are not good children, they don't love us. Because they don't come to us as their children, if I'll put it that way. The minister is now, she was here, but she's gone already to the cabinet. I wonder what is it that she's going to represent on the other side? Because I suppose she's supposed to represent this very same department, which is abandoned long time ago. So that will be the last one, Chairperson. We are very much not happy about how the minister and the deputy minister are handling this department. If they can't or they don't feel that it's their department or the right department, I think they must tell the president so to change them, because they always chop and change and take people to go and just waste people's times and portfolio committee times. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Ntenjan. Before I give the commissioner with his team, can I hear from King? Who's that person? His hand was up. Is it part of the honorable members or not?
No, Chairperson.
All right.
Okay. You can proceed.
Thank you. Baba Onagele, thank you so much. As I've indicated earlier on, I'm covered most about questions raised by honorable members. I believe we'll still go deeper to the document. Our researchers will assist us and we'll have to engage with you, maybe by correspondences. My understanding is that you have done a research and you have outlined what is your role as the commissioner, and that we need to take it into cognizance. It is assisting us while doing our oversight. The issue of red tape, the issue of bullying, as they've indicated, is the topic of the day. So I don't want to go deeper. They have asked you questions. I would like you just to respond to those questions which were related to your presentation. And the last one which I may ask is related to Vodacom and the CIVH deal. Will it benefit SMEs in the true sense of benefication, like infrastructure sharing and flattened wholesale access cost and the seeding through a commercial deal rural areas for SMEs? Because small businesses should be the baby of all departments, not for small business development, because our budget is so little. So to cut across will assist us as the department to can make sure that we are taking care of our people. We really appreciate that you also indicated the issue of participation. So I would also like to know that what is your view? Can you tell us what is it that needs to be done to increase level of SMEs participation in the economy? Because it seems as if it's not there. Even if it is there, it is not enough, because these small businesses, SMEs, need to be capacitated. They can't move without any assistance. So more especially small scale farmers, who are worried about them, that really they are not being boosted a lot. They are not getting funds as it is expected. So those other issues which have been asked, I would like you to respond unto them. But thank you so much, as Honorable Inkosi Luthuli has indicated, that our eyes are now opened. We now understand your role. Can you respond to those comments and questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to start with what the committee can do. I know that a lot of questions were about what the commission has done and what it can do, and I'm not avoiding those. I'm going to come back to them. I did say that these issues go beyond competition. There are issues that government has to tackle. There are issues that I would argue Parliament also has to tackle, just like the judiciary has to tackle, and society at large. And by the way, what I'm saying is that Parliament has a big role to play. It's not unique to South Africa. I mean, if you look at congressional hearings in the US about markets, about how markets are working, the extensive review of digital markets has been done by Congress. It's been the same in the UK with the some of the big cases uncovered of the big cartel in the construction sector. It was Parliament that expressed outrage and called the CEOs and chairmen of construction companies. The Netherlands has done the same. So I'm saying that part of the question I think that came from the Honorable Jacobs about what have other people done. Specifically, Parliament have sought to hold not just government to account, because that's your primary duty, to hold government to account, but also to hold other sectors of society accountable. So I'm going to list three things that I think are crucial to tackle some of these issues. I think that you should call government to account on the payment of suppliers. A lot of suppliers to SMMEs are government or government entities. And the late payments has killed SMMEs. This is no secret, and you know this. So I'm suggesting that you would make a huge difference if you would call for those reports on a regular basis. Call all of us who are in government, ask the minister to present a report to you on when are we paying suppliers. I think that would make a big difference to SMMEs, because part of the problem, if you don't have strict oversight over this, then you have creeping corruption. You know, there are people, I am told, who demand bribes to pay invoices. Now, those are the things that I think you as a committee can stop. Because you can hold everybody who deals with small business within government to account, not just your own department, to say all government departments must account on how they impact on small businesses. And part of that is, you know, how we are paying suppliers. That's one. Two. Also, hold accountable financial institutions on how they are lending to SMMEs. So if you are saying that they don't allow you, so because it will be not just the dealer, but the financier who will not allow you to buy a truck, but allow you to buy a 1.7 million red car. Call them, call the banks and ask them, why would they lend in this matter? Maybe talk to your colleagues also who are having oversight over financial services to raise exactly this question. Why in South Africa do we have this situation where it seems that nobody is prepared to take the risk of funding SMMEs. In this FinTech working group, and I've said we are working quite well with our colleagues who are regulators in the financial services. Some of the things we discover are, for example, for some SMMEs, particularly from the townships, there's not even a risk assessment done. So when you look at there is just no lending done. It's not like they've assessed and said there's a higher risk. No, there's no assessment. It's just not done. So it's what in the US they used to call redlining. So where they say we will not lend in this area. No, now I'm saying that we can do some work as regulators, but you must also help us as politicians. It's not just the role of regulators to do this. You know, you should call us, of course, but also call the banks. The banks must explain themselves because they play such a crucial role in society in terms of determining where the money goes. You know, so I would argue that you could do that. Maybe it's easier for you to start with DFIs because they are under government control. You know, they must explain not just the DFIs dedicated to SMEs, but DFIs that are like the PIC with huge resources, industrial development corporation, hold them accountable. By holding them accountable, all you're saying is that they must be transparent. You know, at this stage, we're not even saying they must do this or do that. We say they must just be required to report. And you can take these reports we're giving you that are saying we are not doing well with SMMEs. Why are we not doing well? We can ask them as well. You can ask them as well. The last I think you can do is to also call big business to account. Big business plays a huge role in terms of suppliers. So suppliers, fortunately, this data is collated, so you will not be asking for new information. So a lot of the BEE codes require that they keep information and report on their supplier, on their suppliers and supplier development programs. Call them to report on that. You know, there must be somebody who comes and say, okay, in terms of suppliers, company A, you are doing well, but you, company B, you seem to be ignoring the imperative of buying your goods and services from SMMEs. And I think that it will help us a lot, this, because once you have public voters, elected representatives, not even saying do that, but just saying tell us what you are doing, I think people will think more carefully then about what they do, because they would know that they would be held accountable. And if they are bullies, let Parliament say it to them, because you can say that big business are bullies to me, but I'm not big business. Say it to them that these practices, we consider them to be bullies, and tell us why should we not legislate against them. So I thought that I should start with that so that I have done my job, because I was told that you also want to hear from me, what can you do? So I hope that that's helpful. Now, in terms of the questions from Honorable Hendricks on the fines, where do fines go? We don't have control over where the fines go. They go to the National Revenue Fund, and that's by law. The only thing that can legitimately go to those who are victims is when there is a sort of a civil claim, which we can also help facilitate. But in terms of fines, they must go to the National Revenue Fund. Competition authorities have the court of their own. What is the problem? The problem is that you don't just haul a person who is big to court because they are big. You have to wait for them to break the law. So because our system is prosecutorial, so you can't prosecute somebody for being big. Being big is not unlawful. So you have to wait for them to break the law. In other words, you have that by that time damage would have been done. You know, so it's not a proactive system where you kind of regulate the behavior. So you do have sector regulators that can do that, that can regulate people's behavior. But the competition authorities are not empowered to do that. We have to sit and wait. We are almost like a traffic cop who must wait for you to exceed the speed limit or cross the red traffic lights. Only then can we then pursue you. So that's why the competition authority is actually not even the most effective tool to deal with this issue of structure in the market. Of course, we do have some powers to deal with structure. But the issue of structure, let's face it, and let's be honest, is going to be determined by who is prepared to invest, who is prepared to finance. And if you want to influence how that market is structured, you must influence those types of investments. So that's why I spoke earlier on about investment incentives, technology policies, and all of these other policies, because they have a direct bearing on the structure of the market. You have to deal with regulations, because there are other proactive regulations that you can establish in order to deal with the structure of the market. Let's look at pay TV. Pay TV, you can license the second and the third and the fourth and the fifth pay TV operator. I mean, what will happen? It's not like we care much if there is competition and some of them exit the market. You know, it's there's no public good that is protected by having a monopoly. You know, so I'm of pay TV as an example. I mean, unlike an Eskom, so because one can argue that maybe we need a national grid, so we need one company to operate it. But why do we need a national grid for pay TV? Why do we need one? It's regulation failing. So I'm saying that when you see the problem, when you see somebody describing the problem, it doesn't mean that they are necessarily the best solver of that problem. The state is quite powerful, and its regulators that kind of issue licenses in these sectors. It's the same with agriculture. I mean, if you allow the land bank to collapse, then you're not going to have growing participation. So what I'm telling you are the results of what has been happening. I mean, we've had the land bank in crisis now for over almost a decade. What does that mean, you know, for our agricultural sector? And especially, what does this mean for a small farmer who cannot go to a regular commercial bank? So the problem is quite complex. But I think when it comes to these issues of red tape that were also raised by the Honorable Kivilias, some of them are beyond our scope. I mean, for example, the labor issues are specifically excluded from the Competition Act. But I embrace and I appreciate that. I think we need to have also a discussion about red tape. I know that the presidency also is doing some work on this. As I've said, I mean, just if all of us could be asked who are government agencies dealing with this matter, if we can be asked to come and report, you know, the unit in the presidency that's dealing with red tape, the people at the DGIC who are dealing with it, an agency like ourselves who might have something to say about it, I really think that we need a little bit more coordination. You know, it's not just a single agency that's going to make a difference on this. So, as like I said earlier, so red tape also includes, you know, when you are going to procure from an SMME, what do you require? We've had situations. I mean, this is actually an example coming from my own organization. Surprising sometimes, where procurement people say that we want 5 reference letters from different people you have worked for. Now, somebody has done a business, is starting off an SMME, is qualified, but doesn't have five references because they have not done five jobs. So I say to my team, but you are excluding all of these people. They are qualified. They know how to do the job, but they have just started a business. So you're saying that you don't want people who are just starting off, however qualified they may be, because you could be leaving one law firm and starting your own, but you don't have references from clients. You have 20 years experience. You can do the work, but you are excluded. So I'm saying that this issue of red tape is quite wide and varied. And I actually agree that we need safe harbors for SMMEs. To say if you are an SMME, you don't need to meet these requirements. I've not looked carefully at the VAT issue, for example, but I think it should be looked at. You know, who should be registered for VAT and so on. I think the issue now specifically around what we've done about ESCOM, actually, we've done a lot on ESCOM, perhaps behind the scenes. The unbundling proposal, which is now being implemented, the Commission made this proposal to government more than 15 years ago. So we've always felt that you need transparency on how you run SOEs. You need somebody running the generation business, the distribution business. And in the case of ESCOM, if you are anticipating that there would be private generators, as we now have, then you would need the buyer of that power to be neutral so that they don't favor their own. Or even if they do have their downstream operation, that there is at least a separation between the two so that there is sufficient Chinese walls. So we've continued holding to this position. We still advocate for it now, as there is a rollout for the unbundling. But I think that the debate has kind of gone beyond just the Commission now. So we are monitoring, we're also engaging with ESCOM itself and others. By the way, what we say, we've said it to Transnet as well, because, you know, you need to understand how these companies account. You need to understand where there is cross subsidies and where there is a potential problems. So you need to understand where, you know, whether particular customers are subsidizing another group. So on rail, you know, it's General Freight subsidizing coal, or coal subsidizing General Freight. The books must be transparent at least, and separation helps with that. So we've been calling for this transparency across the board. Even SAA, by the way, before it collapsed, we were calling for this transparency to say, as government provides subsidies to SAA, just be transparent on what those subsidies are targeted for. If you are targeting small towns that need tourism, right, so you have you subsidize that, be transparent that you're giving them subsidies for these particular purposes. On the issue around land, I think that this is a little beyond my paycheck. I note the comments. We don't distribute land. So I mean, the only thing that we've said in the report is, if you are going to have a successful land distribution, then your immense farmers and smallholder farmers must have a place in the marketplace. Otherwise, you will frustrate your land reform program. So we think that markets do matter for land reform. And if you have smallholder farmers that are unsustainable, then land reform will fail. So we have to fix markets as well. And of course, there are issues around access to land, which I'm saying that are beyond the scope of this. What sectors have we done market inquiries? It's quite a lot. I mean, we've done work, for an example, around public transport, and one of the issues that we flagged as an issue of discrimination are subsidies that are not available for taxis, because the taxi operators are facing quite a dire situation, because we have found that the banks don't lend to taxis directly, so they lend through third parties, such as Taxi Finance. And these third parties are charging astronomical interest rates. And so the taxi owners are squeezed when it comes to financing. But government also wants us to subsidize. I know that there's been sort of some concession now around COVID-19 that government has made. But the reality is that taxis transport the majority of working people, but they don't get subsidized at all. We think that this is a huge distortion in the market. And now we don't think that government must get money that doesn't exist to subsidize taxis, but it's interesting that government still subsidizes trains and buses that transport the minority of commuters. And I would argue, at least in the case of Gautrain, tends to be directed towards more wealthier. So if you live in Gauteng, wealthier commuters are subsidized through the Gautrain on the same route from Johannesburg to Pretoria. But the working people who are using taxis are not. So this is the one of the inquiries we have done. But I think we've also done a few divestitures. Our divestitures have mainly arose out of merger. So we've not had an enforcement case except for one where we've ordered a divestiture. We did order divestiture, which was agreed to by Sasol in the fertilizer space, where they sold their downstream operations to other players, because we found that they provide chemicals for making fertilizer, and now they were favoring their own company that was marketing fertilizer, and they agreed to exit that level of the market and allow independents to distribute and do blending and all sorts of things. So that's also the one that we have done, where there has been a divestiture. But a divestiture, breaking up of companies, is not going to be easy. We think that it's going to be fought all the way to the Constitutional Court, possibly, because it's quite a drastic, it's quite similar, if you think about it, to expropriation. It's a drastic measure, but we have it for extreme cases where the markets have completely failed. We will not hesitate to deploy it. What other countries have done, I think I've already touched on this in my opening remarks, to break down monopolies. But on this EU question you were raising, Honorable Jacobs, in the EU, and to some extent Germany, I think, they have, on the digital market, they've actually designated certain firms as essential firms. So So firms like platforms that, you know, are almost gatekeepers in markets have been designated as essential firms. And basically what that does is they're now obligated to behave in a certain way. So for example, they may not exclude competitors or discriminate. So we've seen that. We've seen in Australia, for example, they've introduced a law where so platforms don't generate news, as an example. They collate all the news from other newspapers and even from people. But people will get into platforms to get the news. So a lot of people, I'll use an example, will go to Twitter and they'll find news in Twitter. There will even be things you can download that gives you the entire article. Now, the platforms don't pay for that content. It helps them to drive traffic and they can advertise, increase their advertising revenue, but they actually don't generate those news. Now, Australia has a law that forces them, and they fought against this law for a long time, but it forces the platforms to now share the revenue with the news generators. So people who have news teams, newspapers, and broadcasters, and so on. Because there is a question of fairness at the center of this. Of course, in the US, as you rightly point out, there have been, I think, two experiments where companies were broken down, AT&T, as well as Standard Oil. And the evidence, I must confess, is quite mixed. I think it was a lot of effort to break companies, and some people are saying the kind of returns from doing that are not as high as were anticipated if you look at the telecoms structure today. But of course, others are saying it was a very big message in a way telling monopolies who is in charge. So I think that historic sort of action by US authorities is always a subject of fascinating debate. I agree. I think I would also add that it's important to reach out to the other committees, as I've indicated. Finance is one of those. I think agriculture, really, the issues of small business in agriculture are glaring, and I would suggest that you prioritize them. The finance issue, I think I've already touched on it. I would just add that, having mentioned agriculture, I mean, I know for a fact that it is very hard to obtain finance for agriculture from the banks. And I can't really understand the real reason for this. It is somehow classified as being more risky than regular business. And there is reluctance, and where there are loans in agriculture, there is a lot of co-payment that's required, 50% that you must finance yourself, or 40% at least that you must finance yourself. So it seems to be a structural impediment to entry into the agricultural sector. You can't get loans there. You can try it. They consider it to be a high risk. This is some of the conversations that I think must be held with the banks. SAP distribution, Honorable Kosilutuli, maybe we can take this offline. I'm happy to deploy a team to look at it. I will just say, in the interest of everybody and so that I don't overpromise, we have dealt with the issue of distribution by SAP. And SAP challenged our prosecution. We were prosecuting it as exclusionary conduct, and we unfortunately lost the case on appeal. So SAP was allowed basically to do what it wants to do at a distribution level. There was a technical sort of legal argument about that, but the But the outcome of that case is that we cannot force SAB on how to arrange its distribution. So the only thing we could do is to engage them nicely. And I think actually this is something perhaps the minister also may be asked to do, to meet up with the company, because it's playing such a huge role in that ecosystem. And I'm aware of people who have actually, whose businesses were destroyed by this distribution arrangement. It's one of the traumatic things I experienced, because some of them do call me directly. So I think it's something I would encourage that you raise with the minister as well. I'll also raise it with and perhaps it's something that can be dealt with separately. I'm happy to go and look also in the South Coast on what's happening around the shopping malls. As I've said, we have undertakings from both Pick n Pay. So Pick n Pay also owns Boxer and ShopRite, that they will allow independence in the shopping malls. So perhaps it's something we can also check what is going on in that part of the world. I have dealt with really what we have done. We could take the whole day, kind of taking you through the work of the commission. So I've picked up some of the priority enforcement cases. There'll always be problems with the law. I mean, it's never going to be perfect. You test it in court, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But overall, I think the competition laws of South Africa are on par with other laws from other developing countries from elsewhere in the world. So I think if you were to benchmark us, I think we are doing, actually we are one of the leaders when it comes to enforcement of competition laws. Whether you look at developing, emerging or developed countries, we are just doing so well. But doing well as a competition agency is not guaranteed that markets are going to change, because we play a role, but our role is not as big as you might think. I always think that we can uncover things. There are many things that companies do and a lot of people cannot uncover, but we can uncover things and we can bring insights about what's going on, but we can't necessarily solve all the problems. Some of these problems need other areas. Chair, your specific question about CIVH, Vodacom merger, it's a matter that's before us, so I would plead that I don't comment on that for now. It's a merger we are currently evaluating. Thanks, Chair. I have answered your question about what needs to be done. I started with it. So thanks very much.
Thank you, Commissioner. Honorable members, here were the responses. We appreciated them. And we were on our way to call all those big retails to come and account before us. But thanks for the responses. Honorable members, do we still have to make some follow-up questions? But to me, he has tried. King, you will alert me because I can't see him.
Yes, Chairperson. There's a hand from Honorable April, Honorable Matulelwa, I think is making a follow-up. And then there's Honorable Tenjane, I think is also making a follow-up. Those are the three hands, Chairperson. Thank you.
Honorable April, Honorable Mtenjan, and Honorable Matulel. Honorable April, can you come in?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and I want to thank the Commissioner. And applaud. There's a noise. Someone is talking over me, Chair. Chairperson?
You can continue. Honorable April, I've muted.
Thank you. I just want to say thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. I took time to listen attentively to what the Competition Commissioner has said, and I want to applaud what the Commission is doing and what they have been doing in acting on their fiduciary responsibility to uncover all of the malpractices and the many cases that they have won. They are doing us proud as a government, I must admit to that. Chair, what I want to raise, and this is important for me to raise, is in the Northern Cape, there is a cabal that has monopolized the transport industry from the mines, where you would find that only white-owned big conglomerates has got as wins the what you would call tenders to transport coal and manganese and all these other things, where you'll find the smaller black guys who will own the trucks and will have the responsibility, but they don't win the tenders directly. One of the things that one would have asked the commissioner is that specifically look into this thing that Bidvest owns or gets all of these contracts from the mines and then uses the small guys as subcontractors with all of the responsibility while they walk away with the biggest chunk of what would be benefit. That is one of the things that I think would be important for the Competition Commission to look into. One has received writing from people in my constituency who are doing work there. One of the guys is owning 26 trucks, but all of them are subcontracting, and none of them are getting direct contracts from mining companies, which are giving all these contracts to completely white-owned. It's like a Booty Brothers Cup type of thing that is happening, and one would want to just alert the commissioner to that. Thank you very much again for the inputs. I think it's taken very good, and what you've done so far is very commendable. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable April. Honorable Matulelo.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to say as well that we need to, in this thing of, it's not a question, a follow-up question, but just want to comment on what the presenter has touched on what we need to do when he was saying we need to hold a government accountable for payments of suppliers in all government projects or in all governments, whatever that is happening. And the DFIs, the PICs and banks must be held accountable on where money goes. Because the thing we wanted to ask to the commission that so far, what have they done from their arrival? Not what are they going to do? I wanted to say or to correct the way the presenter was making it on what are they going to do. We wanted to know so far or from their arrival, what have they done as the commission? Yes, we see everything that is happening in the research and everything that is tabled before us. That's the first thing that we want to know. And then second, the thing that we need to hold all the big businesses, we need to hold them accountable. Also, we need to do oversight on these main contractors, as Honorable April has mentioned some of the things that I wanted to mention as well in this thing of we need to do away with the main contractor and the subcontractor. Because many, as we were doing oversight and checking all the state of the main contractors that are given some work, more especially plumbing and all these projects of the government, they take main contractors, but only to find out that the main contractors, they don't have equipment to work the contract that have been given to them. If it's a plumbing, they take subcontractors with a qualified, full skilled. Is the subcontractors that are working, or the small businesses, we can put it like that, small SMMEs that are being subcontracted, are the ones with skills, first Chairperson. Two, are the ones which are doing the perfect work. The main contractor is only just taking money, I don't know why, for what good reason. So I think we need to regulate also the skills must be put on the table in this thing of a project. I think the contract must be given direct to the subcontractors who are qualified, who do these things. It's not that the government doesn't know this thing. It knows everything. And they know that the subcontractors are the ones that are doing the work. So we must do away with this main contractor. If a main contractor is given a work, must do it as well physically. Not that the 100% project is done by the subcontract. How is that possible? Or how can that happen in this government? No, we must do away with the main contractors as well. And we must request that there must be some of the things from government that must be done directly. It must be tender also as well if you are still doing these things of tenders. Because we've been clear about the tenders, that the tenders must be abolished. So if you carry on with them, you must give them to the small businesses, to the SMMEs. It must be mentioned that SMMEs or subcontractors must come and submit, not the main contract. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mathulelo, Honorable Mthenjana. I believe Honorable Mthenjana is a follow-up question, so that will make it easier for the Commissioner. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Indeed, Chairperson, it is a follow-up question. Actually, it's not a question, but clarity. Because remember, I asked the question to say they must tell us how far did they go up to now. And the commission is telling us indeed that they are pulling big companies, which are pulling the small businesses. Now, they recommend that the department or the committee, those companies must come and account here in the committee. We agree that, but is it not them who's supposed to identify them to say, here is a big company, they've done this, here is the finding, I'm the witness. Call them. If they refuse or they say no, it's a lie, I'm there, I'll come and witness to say yes, you have done this, this is a proof of done. I didn't hear that, Chairperson. I didn't hear that part, because it is of gonna be no use, of course, to call big companies just because they are big companies and then we say they are bullied. They come here in the committee, they say, okay, tell us where we bullied. Then we look at each other in the eyes and we don't know what to tell them. So rather they identify this thing to say this is what they've done. And we are here with the evidence. Call them to come to the committee. When they are there and then they say they didn't do it, we will come there and say they did it. Here is the evidence. So that is that clarity. That's the one I'm seeking. Because there are many bullying companies, big companies that are bullying. We know that. But who are they? As a commission, did they identify them? Where are they? Let them show us. Then we call them to come here. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Commissioner. Can you respond?
Thank you, Chair. I think I sort of understand now. I mean, I think we're going to need to, if I may start with the last question, maybe think about what are the systemic issues that require policy interventions which emanate from the conduct of companies. Because obviously this committee will not be prosecuting companies. I'm not saying that they must call companies and confront them for all sorts of contraventions. That's our job to do. But what I'm saying is that there are things that are systemic. Let me give you an example. I've said that the banks are systemic. If the banks decide not to lend to SMMEs, the department might as well close shops, because there will be no growth in SMMEs. So I'm saying that you then can have a conversation with them, with the banks, and say, given the mandate, given the problems South Africa has with jobs, and knowing that SMMEs are the ones that are going to create jobs, as banks tell us, with big companies, again, you're not saying, you know, we're going to prosecute you, you've broken the law. What you're saying is, we have all of these reports. I'm saying that the reports are there on the suppliers, because they are required to keep them for BEE tables. Now, one is supposed to be able to say, and if the committee can do this by itself, we can even ask the department, show us the trends of the big companies engaging with SMMEs. Because there are companies that just won't buy from SMMEs. And there are companies that would be doing it better. So but you need to be able to get that kind of a report. So I'm saying that the role you play will not substitute, of course, the need for us to do. And I think that Honorable Mthalelwa also makes this point that you're talking about also the work that the commission has done. I have presented the work that the commission has done. I could repeat it again. Of course, I've chosen samples because of time. I've mentioned the case on the number plates. It's actually quite an important case that because there is a monopoly, and that monopoly, by the way, is enabled by government. So the Gauteng provincial government is responsible for issuing number plates. Now you have one guy with a machine, and nobody else can enter that market, because you have to go to him to get your kind of ability to write on these blanks. You must also buy the blanks from the same guy. Now, we've prosecuted, we are done, we've won that case. But the issue now is, who then enters the market? And how is that facilitated? So I'll give you another example. We prosecuted a cartel for bread price fixing. We won the case. And part of the strategy of the bread makers was to eliminate SMMEs that were challenging their dominance. So they would reduce the price of bread, predate on them until they exit the market, and then put the prices up once they exit. Now, we prosecuted and finished, but we went to government and said, baking bread is not such a complex thing. You can sponsor entry and have people baking and distributing bread. In that way, you will be undermining this cartel. And by the way, this is one of the areas where, after huge engagements, sometimes disagreements with National Treasury, we got some of the fines from the bread cartel redirected into a fund which was administered by the IDC to fund precisely what I'm talking about, the entry of new players who could undermine the cartels. I've also mentioned the cases we have done in the fertilizer space, where we ordered a divestiture. After we prosecuted a cartel that involved the large fertilizer companies in the country. In the end, we found that the ringleader in the cartel that was coordinating everybody was Sasol. And we ordered Sasol to exit downstream operations in fertilizer. In other words, they should not market fertilizer, because once they are in that market, they abuse that dominance. That work is there. We have done it successfully as an intervention. I think I also mentioned the case of SAP, where we have not been successful. We actually lost the case. So the case against SAP was that the independent distributors, they are required to invest in this distribution center, invest in trucks, and so on. But SAP dictates to them which areas they can sell. So sometimes you can have a border, arbitrary border drawn, and you are distributing in a rural area. Across the border is a township with more concentrated chain of customers, but you are not allowed to cross. They dictate which products you distribute. They don't want competitor products. They also dictate the price at which you sell that product. Now, we raised all of these things before the courts, and the courts said to us, upheld the argument of SAP, that because SAP said, actually, we could do distribution ourselves. We don't need to appoint distributors. So you can't have the commission dictating to us how we appoint distributors, because after all, we could bypass that level and just distribute ourselves. We think it was a problematic argument, but I'm not here to argue the law. But that's how we lost that case. So I'm saying, honorable members, I'm wary of your time. I can take you through these cases. I've not even spoken in detail about all the market inquiries we've done. I know that Honorable Jacobs has asked me to do that. I sampled two. Now, we've done more than six inquiries. I can take you through all of those, but what I've done with the limited time. So if you go to some enforcement and market inquiry activities of the report, you will see a list of cases there. I've summarized some of them, but not all. If you go to the major section of this report, I've also given you three measures. I've discussed three measures. But the commission, let me give you an example. The commission in a month is looking at over 30 measures. And in a year has around 500 measures. Now, of course, we do summarize these reports for purposes of the annual report, but this was not the purpose today. The purpose today was to focus on SMMEs. So those reports are there. Actually, they are quite impressive, but that was not what I came here to do today, to give those reports. So I can do that, but I think that I've given you today a kind of a bird's eye view of what we do. If I must review what we've done since we were established, I would need considerably more time. But I think that what I've given you today is a very good summary. I think on this issue of the cabal in the Northern Cape, Honorable April, again, this is one of those I think I'd like to take offline. Maybe if you can provide us with that correspondence, we will intervene. Thanks very much, Chair.
Chairperson.
King, I have lost him.
No, he's done, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Commissioner, for the responses. I believe we'll still call you, but we are happy about the response and the presentation, as I've indicated earlier on. Thank you so much. King, can we go back to the to our agenda? So, Commissioner, you are released with your team.
Thank you very much, Chair and the members.
Can you see?
Yes, I can see, King. Consideration and adoption of the committee minutes of the 9 March 2022. Can you flag the minutes for us?
Can you proceed, Chairperson?
Proceed, Braking, page one. Corrections. Page two. Page two. Next page. Next page. Thank you. Can I have a mover for the adoption of the minutes?
Chairperson, Comrade April moves for the adoption of the minutes that's presented.
Mr. Konda, honorable members.
Chair, I will support that. I will support Honorable April.
Thank you, Honorable Kruger. The minutes are duly adopted. Can you go back to the agenda? Announcement, if there are any, Braking.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. On announcement, Chairperson, what we as discussed in the management. Firstly, we'll request members of the committee. If members has forwarded the link to their constituencies or to one of the person who is part or will be interested in following the matters of the committee, may the member indicate to the secretariat so that we can know exactly who are people in the platform. We know that the committee is open for everyone, but the participation of the people who are non-members of the committee, it's not allowed. A person can participate through the member of the committee. So as I've indicated, it is for the second time. Last time there was a person who just sent the chat, and that person was not a member of the committee. And today the other person was there and then raised the hand, and we didn't know who the person is. So should it happen that members have forwarded the link to non-members participating, may he or she indicate to secretary so that we can also brief or tell the person that he's not allowed to participate, but he or she can only participate through the member if he wants to ask a question. Number two, chairperson, on announcement is the question of the program of the last week. There have been changes, and we've got the directive from the office of the House Chairperson that program was to do the oversight, which then the committee, we discussed in the committee that will be going to KZN and the Gauteng. So now there are two, there have been changes in the parliamentary program, where on the 30th, there will be a plenary on the matter of vote of no confidence to the president and the department. And on the 31st also, there's a, it has been set aside for the women caucus, and also there's a plenary in the afternoon. So we are going to change that, since the House Chairperson indicated that the oversight for that week has been the council, and then only committees can sit. That time has been set aside for committees to sit as a committee. So we're going to amend the program, because we do have some issues that we can include for those week. So those are two announcements that we wanted to bring into the attention of the committee. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Braking. Announcements are not discussed. We just take the marching orders. Then the next item is closing remarks. Honorable members,
Madam Chair, we can't hear you.
Please,
honorable members, my battery was low where I was trying to connect. There is noise. I'm now moving out. I want to conclude the meeting. Thank you so much for participating. It was excellent. I believe as the committee will continue holding everyone accountable, that is our role. The meeting has come to an end. Thank you so much.